Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone. It is time to talk Marquette basketball again. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush back again. And Phil, it's a weird feeling for me because I dare say, am I maybe a little optimistic going into college basketball season this year?
Oh, come join me on the dark side. It's lovely over here.
Yeah, today's show, this is essentially our season preview podcast. It's about that time. A lot of preseason predictions are out around college basketball, preseason polls, preseason previews. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to preview the team a little bit, talk about the roster, maybe what takeaways and any we can get from the scrimmages and stuff we've seen, and also go through some of the preseason predictions across the interwebs for Marquette basketball this season. And as we do every season around this time, Phil and I are going to go game by game and give our predictions on Marquette's record, see where they're going to end up, where we think they might end up. Before we get to the game by game, Phil, let's just talk a little bit about the team. We've talked a little bit in the off season. We've seen a scrimmage. Alan Bukowski from Crack Sidewalks was at one scrimmage and kind of gave a long thread with his takes on it. Any new thoughts you have on the roster, the Marquette roster, since we last spoke?
No, I don't think there are any like original thoughts. I just think that this roster is going to be in a bit of flux, right? There's a lot of potential, but also a lot of unknowns. You know, kind of there's the opportunity for what's the Twitter meme? Lots of red flags, but maybe there's
that needs to go away, by the way.
Yes,
I think that's run its course.
Correct.
Yes, go on.
Yes, correct. So I think the roster has talent. I think the roster has potential, but there's going to be a lot of uncertainties and inconsistencies that are going to bear fruit or lack thereof over the course of the season. So I think it's just going to be a little bit chaotic. But you know, that's 2021 for you, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much what we've been saying since the roster came together in the middle of the summer. You know, the phrase, this is a young team, is very much overused in college basketball. We've heard it among our own fan base for the last 7-8 years. But this is a young team. If any team is a young team, this Marquette basketball team is a young team with 9 freshmen and sophomores. I don't know how to categorize some of the players now, because if you look at Marquette's roster on its official website, a lot of guys are listed as redshirt freshmen, who I would consider sophomores. I guess they're kind of accounting the COVID year and how they're classifying some of these guys. For example, Justin Lewis. To me, if you ask me what class he's in, I would say he is a sophomore.
Correct.
Because he played last year. But he is listed as a redshirt freshman on Marquette's official page.
Yeah. Well, and Greg Elliott's a redshirt junior. Right? Like, it's confusing and, quite frankly, unnecessary, but whatever. Because, right, the COVID year that everyone's going to get is an optional year, right? Like
I want to say this is true. Is it at University of Virginia where they don't use terms like freshman, sophomore? They say first year student and second year student.
I believe so. Yes.
So I feel like that's how I need to describe some of these guys. Like Justin Lewis is a second year player. You know,
right.
Oso Iguodaro is a second year player. You know, Stevie Mitchell is a first year player. But yeah, I'm curious how they'll like portray that if with regards to like records. For example, let's say Justin Lewis goes out and has a 20 rebound game. They'll say this is the most by a Marquette freshman since, I'm like, yeah,
is it though?
Not a freshman.
Yeah.
Not a freshman, you know, like to me. But I'm just curious how they're going to portray that. Maybe we'll get into a whole other debate with the record keepers as far, you know, kind of like who's a freshman and sophomore. Remember how Dwayne Wade was referred to as a freshman a few times when Henry Ellenson was having his big year, and we're kind of like, he wasn't a freshman that year in 2002.
Right.
He wasn't.
Right.
But
it's going to be great Marquette basketball Twitter fodder, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is something that is stupid and perfect to argue about on Twitter. But my point is, I'm not sure how to describe some of these guys other than first-year player or second-year player, because apparently that's kind of the way we're looking at it. But the bottom line is, you know, like 75% of the roster is a first- or second-year college player.
Well, I think it's interesting because they label Morcell is a graduate student, and same with Kirk Wath. And it's like, maybe they're literally in grad school, which makes sense, but I've never seen someone on the roster described that way.
Yeah, I don't have either, but yeah, I think they've, since both of those guys have played 4 years of college basketball, or been on, not played 4 years, but, you know, been in college for 4 years, I guess that is technically accurate. So the point we're trying to make is, we expect mistakes and growing pains with this team because of the youth, even though there are some, you know, a couple older guys who could be stabilizers at the top of the roster, Morcell and Kirkwath being two of those. And when I try to figure out maybe who's going to start and see the most minutes, you know, my first instinct is to say, well, I have no idea. But when you think about it a little more, I think it is not that hard to figure out the guys who are going to get the most, because obviously Morcell is going to start. He's, yep. You know, he didn't come here to be a backup, and he's a reigning, or not reigning, I guess he's a former Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, and that's exactly what Shaka Smart is known for, his defense. So Daryl Morcell is going to be a key part. Obviously, he's going to start. Justin Lewis, you would think, has to start. I don't know why he wouldn't. You need a big man in the middle. Kirkwath just fits that bill. I would think it makes perfect sense that he is starting. I would think Greg Elliott starts as a fifth-year college basketball player. Fourth-year player. He's been in school for 5 years now. But I would think he plays, and then I guess then that leaves one more spot. Who's the ball handler? Or maybe they go bigger with Omax Prosper. But if they need one more ball handler, maybe it's Tyler Kolick. Maybe it's the freshman Stevie Mitchell. I think that's just that one last spot when I'm trying to figure out a starting lineup, Phil, is that fifth spot. Because to me, Lewis, Morcell, Quath all seem like locks, and Greg Elliott seems pretty safe as a starter. To me, there's just a fifth spot, but then it's rotation minutes after that, because it seems like everybody brings a little something to the table.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit different on Greg, right? So I agree, it's Quath, Morcell, and Justin Lewis are the obvious three that are locked in. I think you're going to have, now, we've already had the first of the infamous Marquette boot sightings at the scrimmage with Stevie Mitchell. If it hadn't been for the boot, I would have kind of locked Mitchell in as a starter.
You're not a Marquette basketball player until you've worn a boot. Yes,
correct. So that one's a little up in the air. Greg, where I'm a little, again, and this maybe gets into the Marquette style, you know, and we'll get into a little bit, to Havoc or not Havoc. That is the question. I think Greg gets perhaps starter minutes, but I think he's probably not literally starting the game, right? I think he's going to be kind of the first sub off the bench. He's going to be an energizer guy. He's going to be somebody that's going to be sure to be in the game when some of the more experience is out, like Morcell or Quath or even Justin Lewis, when they're out, Greg's for sure going to be in the lineup. So I think Greg becomes, I think it's too dismissive of his experience and talent to call him a super sub, but effectively I think that's the role he's going to play. Whereas I think, you know, a Stevie Mitchell, a Justin Lewis, you know, are going to be, you know, just straight up starters from the get go.
Okay, I could see that. And, you know, one thing Alan said in his kind of thread during the scrimmage is he didn't notice one primary ball handler necessarily for the team. Seems like a lot of guys were bringing the ball up, like whoever was near the basket when it was time to inbound the ball, that guy brought it up, whether it was Morcell or Kolick or Greg Elliott or Mitchell. Or I guess, did Mitchell play? Maybe he didn't play.
No, he didn't play. He was in, again,
so yeah,
the boot.
So the point is, a lot of different guys are bringing the ball up there. So it may be somebody different all the time, but at some point you're going to need one guy to lead the offense and get the teams into sets. And who knows, maybe that is Morcell sometimes, even though he is not really a point guard, but he's more of a wing player. But that's just the one part that maybe I'm curious about is how the ball handling situation works out. But I agree. I'm high on Mitchell, and I hopefully he's not in the boot too much longer. But
right. Well, and I also think the thing that's interesting and why it's hard to nail down is there is, I think, both by intent and just kind of by who is available and how the roster could be constructed post-Wojo era. Like, I think this is the closest roster we've seen to a true kind of Buzz Williams positionless basketball in quite a while, right? Like, switchables are back, baby, right? So that's where it's hard to kind of nail down you know, what a starting roster looks like, because there is a ton of roster flexibility, right? Like, I think the starting lineup looks significantly different against, I don't know, say a Wisconsin versus, you know, a DePaul or a Xavier or something like that, right? Like, there is, you know, there might be times where we're starting three true forwards and centers, and there may be times where we go four guards and Justin Lewis at the center, right? Like, we're going to have the roster flexibility to play different styles and lineups.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, as long as you got enough guys who could shoot and handle the ball, I kind of like that. And it seems like Marquette might be deeper in the middle than I thought. You know, that Kian Etijeré, he looks bigger than I thought he would be. Like, yeah. He looks like he could be a legit pretty good postman. Maybe not right away, but he looks like he could be a pretty good player in the middle. And then I am very curious to see how Oso comes along. He didn't get to play very much last year, whether it was depth chart things or just he had some injuries as well. So I think Marquette, then you got the local guy, David Joplin, who's going to be another guy, probably fits in the 3-4-5 area.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, to your point, they are switchables, and Shaka does have a lot of options, whether he wants to go big or go small. So it's good to have options because, you know, Mark, like you said, Phil, they are playing a lot of different types of teams this year, whether it's in the Big East or non-conference play. So it's good to know that they could maybe switch things around and match up however they need to match up.
Right. So, like, if you had to nail it down to one, like, this is, you know, if you had to nail it down to one player, who's the player you're most intrigued or interested in going into the season?
As far as, like, maybe a guy I don't know much about.
Yeah, don't know about, or who's the one that you think, boy, there's a lot of potential here that I'm really intrigued to see how it kind of plays out.
I go back and forth between Mitchell and Prosper. I'm going to lean Mitchell just because he's a freshman, because if he turns out to be a high-level Big East caliber point guard, I think that kind of accelerates the plan under Shaka Smart, that if Marquette does have a really quality point guard who can both distribute and score and defend, that's a piece that we would have now that maybe I'm not sure we have right now. So I lean Mitchell, but I'm also very intrigued by Prosper, who people have a lot of good things to say about. He's got great size and ability, didn't put up the best numbers at Clemson, but maybe he didn't really have the opportunity to, and that's why he transferred. So Prosper could also be kind of a swing guy, whether if he's a high-impact guy, maybe that moves the needle a little bit closer to being a postseason quality team, whereas if Prosper does not contribute very much, maybe they come back to the pack and Marquette is closer to what the preseason predictions say.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I generally agree. If I had to pick one player, I think I'm really intrigued by David Joplin. Again, I think there's a lot of talent there. Some might say, oh, it's a bit of a redundant piece with the other bigs. You know, Prosper would play potentially a similar position. You know, obviously Justin Lewis is gonna play the forward. But I think it's interesting because if David Joplin can play better than a typical freshman, I think it unlocks a lot of roster combinations. I think it gives us flexibility in terms of not forcing Justin Lewis to have to do most of the work down low. We can play smaller big lineups, if that makes sense, right? We can play a David Joplin, with Justin Lewis and perhaps a Prosper and have a lot of ball handlers that are also front court players, right? So I think that's the one that's most intriguing to me, because I think there's a combination of hype, talent, and roster potential that I think he brings that I'm just curious to see how it works out. I'm not setting some expectation that he's going to be amazing, but just really from a curiosity standpoint, curious to see how he progresses in the season.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested. I was also interested. Allen's had a few things to say about Cam Jones, who, if you look at recruiting rankings and whatnot, he wasn't that highly recruited. But I think, you know, when you've got 12 guys on the roster, somebody's going to be 11th, 12th in the depth chart. But, you know, Cam looked like he could play a little bit, and he may contribute more than we think this season. And if he proves to be a quality ball handler and a guy who can get to the basket like he showed in the scrimmage, maybe he plays more than we thought. Because there's always going to be a surprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
With a guy maybe you didn't think would contribute much who turns out to be a little better than you thought. Like Greg Elliott was kind of that guy for me 4 years ago. Like, I didn't know if he was much of a prospect at all, and he's turned out to be a very reliable guard for this team over the last few years. So Jones intrigues me in that regard.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and this is maybe a bit of a segue into the style discussion we've had in the past, but worth revisiting. I mean, a lot of these guys may get a lot of minutes depending on the style, right? Like, I think Shaka has come out and said, like, he's not going to the full quote-unquote traditional Havoc as he played at VCU, but he is definitely going to play a pressure, pseudo-press type of defense, or at least has insinuated as such, which means you're going to, I mean, ideally you play that without fouling, but you're still, just from a fresh leg standpoint, you're gonna need legs, and you know, when you play a high intensity defense, and so I think we're gonna see a lot of folks, especially in non-conference, get a lot of run as Wojo, or geez, I'm gonna have to delete that from the file. Where as Shaka gets a feel for, you know, these players in game situations at game speed, what they're capable of, what their deficiencies are, and as he adjusts to, you know, what he's actually got.
Old habits die hard. It was a long 7 years, Phil.
Yes, correct.
But no, I agree with you as far in, like, yeah, I get what you're saying. What Shaq has said that in interviews too, with whether it's with The Athletic or with some other places, that yeah, it's not going to be full court press all the time. I think that has not proven to be all that successful in major college basketball. I think it does very well at mid-major programs when you're maybe playing teams that don't have quite as much talent, and you can maybe take advantage of less talented teams who really can't handle pressure like that. But when you've got bigger athletes going against some guys that have more pros, Havoc kind of can get broken down a little bit. He will be playing an aggressive defense, and I am kind of with you there. I'm curious to see exactly what that looks like, where it's aggressive and pressing, but not Havoc, not 40 minutes of hell, to use the Nolan Richardson term from his Arkansas teams. But yeah, so I think we all expect this team to have a defensive identity at some point, even if it's not immediately. But if we're setting like some minimum, I guess, expectations or some hopes for this team, that they will establish that they are an aggressive, hopefully quality defensive team sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, I think tying it together with, you know, you mentioned the observations from Allen that, you know, pretty much it's borne out in the various Instagram videos that have come out, or YouTubes of practice or whatever. Like, there's a lot of folks that are bringing the ball up. So if you're playing aggressive defense, rebounding, hopefully, trying to turn people over, it's leading to an aggressive offense as well, right? So stylistically, I don't think we can get any more opposite of what we've seen in the past 7 years as to what we're going to see in year one of Shaka, right? And the basket may not always go in the hoop. It may not be pretty all the time, but I personally am very enthusiastic for a code word from the team, a violent defense and an assertive offense, right? Like, I think that stylistically is going to be exciting for the fans. I think year one, as we get into the predictions, might be a little rough from a results standpoint, but I think it certainly presents a good opportunity to kind of cleanse the palate, if you would.
That Game of Thrones Cersei gif, however you say it, when she says "I choose violence" is going to be my most used GIF this season.
We are going to melt down the GIF loader because it is going to be used constantly, I think.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it. You know, we try to be optimistic, but when you look at the preseason predictions for Marquette, not that great. Not that great. And, like, we don't have a whole lot of evidence to say they're wrong right now, but if you look at what a lot of the credible preseason predictions have for Marquette. Yeah, as you might expect, they're not very good. I mean, with a young team, a new coach, a lot of other teams in the Big East may be returning more experience, and of course, almost all of them return their coach, except for, I guess, DePaul's the only other one with a new coach. But so just quick rundown of
Is that a good thing when you come to Georgetown? They got a returning
What's
coach?
That?
Is it good when Georgetown has their coach returning?
Maybe good for us.
Yeah, that's true. Good for the league and their records.
Yeah. I'm not rooting against Patrick Ewing, but yeah, we'll see. But anyway, so like a few of the preseason rankings, predictions. KenPom, which we reference a lot, they have Marquette. KenPom has Marquette 87th in the country, 10th best team in the Big East, with only DePaul worse. Bart Torvik has Marquette 95th, 9th in the Big East, with only Georgetown and DePaul behind Marquette. Matt Norlander of CBS Sports did his annual ranking of every team in college basketball. Pop quiz, how many teams are in college basketball now, Phil?
368?
358.
Ah, damn.
Very close, very close. Marquette came in at 105. 10th in the Big East, according to Norlander, only DePaul worse. Big East Media Day poll had Marquette 9th in the Big East. So it's pretty clear that the preseason power rankings, Marquette, DePaul, and Georgetown are all in the fourth tier because they're all 9, 10, 11 in some order. And then your friends here at the MUBB PAC, we did our own poll. You may see it on AnonymousEagle.com. They polled all of us and asked for some preseason predictions. We were super optimistic and had Marquette 8th.
So, it's getting scorching with that ranking.
Everyone else has a 9 or 10. We went really optimistic and went 8. So, again, Phil, tempered expectations, which I think is fair. We don't have a whole lot of evidence to say these things are horribly wrong and or could be way off, because even we have Marquette in the lower tier of the Big East ourselves. But I feel like, as opposed to past years where maybe we had low expectations and were not optimistic about the direction of the program, this year, I wouldn't say it's low expectations. I would call them tempered expectations, because I don't want to put a lot on this young team and a coach in his first year. But I am optimistic about the program going forward, even if there aren't a lot of wins in the record this season.
Yeah, overall, it's year one. I know there's going to be some folks that are going to be like, well, especially if we take a step back and finish 9th, and there's going to be folks that, hey, we never did that under Wojo. Why are we making this change just to get worse? But I'm with you. I think overall, all evidence points to Shaka building a strong culture that I think will help propel the program forward. I like the roster composition, especially given the conditions and circumstances that Shaka was recruiting under. I think there's the potential for excitement within the season. We're going to get to our scheduled predictions. Optimistic Phil is certainly like, has cracked open the cage and is poking out like, hey, can I come out? But don't take any predictions as like, those are expectations we should hit, right? Like, I think the expectations for the team this season really should be an entertaining product on the floor, good folks, and like progress and improvement throughout the season, right? And I know some people may be like, hey, we're a huge program, we need higher expectations right away, but it's year one of a rebuild, not a reload. And anything we get over and above somewhere around 500 and good entertaining basketball is gravy in my book.
Yeah, well, Marquette was never predicted to finish 9th or worse under Wojo. They did finish 9th twice.
Right, which is part of the reason he gone.
That's part of the reason why a change was made. So, might be nice to overachieve preseason expectations for once. Really haven't done that in a while.
That's true.
So, yeah, if they do finish 8th, ha, prove the haters wrong. 8th.
Listen. I think the haters will be wrong simply because I don't think they're accounting for how bad some of the teams in the Big East actually will be. Marquette will be 8th or better simply because there are 4 teams at least in the Big East that are worse than Marquette.
Well, Which four do you think? Before we dive into our game by game, which we're going to get to here in a second, which four teams would you say are definitely worse? Obviously, we're going to say Georgetown, DePaul, because they're predicted, for the large most part, finished bottom two by most everyone. So Georgetown, DePaul, what other two?
So I have Georgetown, DePaul for sure. I also put Providence in that bottom four. And a bit controversial, but I'm going to say Creighton as well ends up in the bottom four.
You know, we've had that chat in our little MUBB pack group chat quite a bit, and I'm kind of coming over to that side a little bit because, you know, while Creighton was great last year, there are a lot of new faces, and I know they got freshmen that could be really good, but Creighton's going to have a lot of the same problems Marquette has as
Correct.
Far as
young guys. And if culture matters, they've got some cultural issues with the head coach that are going to linger on.
I don't know what the temperature is there as far as McDermott and if they're over that whole situation of the thing he said last year. But maybe they are, maybe they aren't, or you know, maybe if things go poorly this year, that comes back up. But if things go well, maybe you forgive them. You know,
right.
Maybe you get over it. But
yeah, I think what I'm saying is I don't know that he has a ton of runway. And he's got he's like you said, he's got all of the same challenges that Marquette does, you know, and certainly probably a higher rated class coming in. So on paper, more talent, so more likely to succeed. But you don't know. It's certainly in my book a more volatile situation than Marquette's situation.
Well, yeah, I would say for sure, because all these players, because nothing's gone wrong yet. So
right.
They're all bought into Shocker right now.
Correct.
So they're all in right now. But yeah, I could definitely see what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Shall we get to the game by game?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, so we do this every preseason for those of you who are longtime listeners. First of all, thank you. Secondly, we do this every year before the season starts. We just go game by game, just go through the schedule and just predict win, loss, and then we total it up and see what we think Marquette's season will be. So Phil, let's just start. We got two bye games off the top. SIU Edwardsville, coached by former Marquette player Brian Baroni. He's still there, I believe.
Yes.
And then New Hampshire after that. I assume you have two wins there.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, we're going to start off nice and easy there and get two wins for sure.
Yeah, I have two wins as well. SIU Edwardsville. Let me see in the preseason KenPom real quick before we move on. They are not all that high. They are in the preseason in KenPom. Hold on, I got to log in again. I want to say they were 300-something. Yeah, 313. New Hampshire is 225. So, but then after that, a team that is, five in KenPom's preseason, that is Illinois. That's a game at home at the Fiserv Forum. This is probably the first really, hopefully, big crowd, raucous crowd. Hopefully, it's a full house when you're playing Illinois. But I got this one as a loss, Phil.
Yeah, I have it as a loss as well. And I think Shaka breaks some longstanding traditions Wojo built that were not positive, but this is not one of them. I do think we get a little bit boat raced by a Big Ten team.
Yeah, that happens quite a bit. Gavitt games have not been kind to Marquette since they kind of became a thing.
Not particularly
All right, so
fond
both
of
two
them.
2-1 right now.
Yes, 2-1.
All right, so next one is the preseason tournament that Marquette is in. This is the Charleston Classic. If you're not familiar for the field, on one side of the bracket, you have St. Bonaventure, who is ranked in the preseason, Boise State, Clemson, Temple, and then on Marquette's side of the bracket, Marquette will play Ole Miss, and then pending win or loss, they would get either Elon or West Virginia after that. Ole Miss is, according to KenPom's preseason ranking, a top 60 team. KenPom has Mississippi 57th. So for that reason, I'm just going to go with a loss in the first game, Phil.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we'll see how they produce, but I don't have any faith, you know, that Marquette can go on the road in a tournament and pull out a win against a top 60, top 50 team yet early in the season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But then assuming you lose that game, you've got Elon after that. Elon is in the 200s as far as preseason prediction. So I think you can get that one. So I've got a win there. And then depending on how the bracket shakes out, you're probably looking at either, I don't know, Temple maybe. Temple or Clemson, that go either way, or Boise State. Those teams are all maybe close to Marquette and KenPom rank. So I'm going to be a little optimistic here and say another win. So I'm going to say after a loss at the beginning of the Charleston Classic, I'm going to say Marquette gets two wins before they get out of there.
I agree.
I got overall 2-1 at the Charleston Classic.
I agree. We, to steal from Solid Verbal, we agree. Elon and Temple would be my opponents, and I think Marquette wins against both of those.
Well, so dare we say we're getting a little optimistic here. Two bye games after that, Northern Illinois, Jackson State. I got win-win. I assume you do as well.
Agreed.
All right, so then the big one every season, the big rivalry game with Wisconsin, that is in Madison this season. How do you see? How do you predict a game against the Badgers right now, Phil?
Well, a couple of preambles to this. One, I think Wisconsin is highly overrated. I probably say that every season, but I mean it this season. And, you know, Wisconsin lost four out of five, or was it four out of four or five out of seven? Whatever it was, Wojo had a winning record against Wisconsin, and he was Wojo. I think. Shaka will have all the juice he needs to win against Madison. He's from the Madison area. He's going to be playing, you know, he's taking the team into his essentially his hometown. I think Marquette comes out with a win there.
I think Marquette wins because screw Wisconsin.
Agreed. Begin Badger Hate Week now.
I agree. You know, we talked about maybe possible culture issues at Creighton. That may be there at Wisconsin a little bit.
Sure.
When they got assistant coaches recording the head coach and trying to get him fired. There might be a messy situation there. And, you know, Brad Davidson's back for his 12th season of college basketball. So, I mean, maybe Wisconsin has – and they have him. Micah Potter's back as well, I believe.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Are they going to keep tracking – are they going to track in the rafters the number of nut punches Brad Davidson has in his career? Or, you know
– it will be a program record that will never be broken. Or maybe it will be.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe they'll recruit another dirty player after Davison. But so yeah, I got to win. But after that, Phil, I think if I'm going to get optimistic for that one, I'm going to come back a little bit and say you get after a big win against Wisconsin, you got a Valley game at Kansas State, who really is probably right on par with Marquette as far as preseason rankings go. But I'm going to say you go on the road to Manhattan, Kansas, and lose to K-State.
I would agree with that. I don't, you know, with the young, inexperienced team, I think going on the road after a big win against Wisconsin is going to be tough, right? Winning back-to-back road games is a tough ask for that type of team. So I've got a loss there.
Last non-conference game is a big one, and a home game against you. This is the return game from last season. Against UCLA, a team who surprised a lot of people and went to the Final Four last year. They bring a lot of guys back, including Johnny Juzang, who I thought would go pro, but he decided to come back to school. UCLA is going to be really, really good, and so I think that's a tough one. So I got a loss against the Bruins.
Yeah, as do I. I mean, I'd love to say otherwise, but I think, you know, this early in the season, it's too much to ask for them to beat a top 10 team, even at home.
Yeah, I would agree. So you and I have the exact same prediction so far, Phil. This is kind of a change from recent years, or maybe I was a little more pessimistic on some non-con things. But we both, through non-conference play, have Marquette at 7-4. I will say one more thing before we move to the Big East play. If this team does surprise a little bit and maybe gets a win they're not supposed to, like, say, Illinois or UCLA at home, I mean, the optimism could, you know, get turned up to 11 really quick on this team if they get a couple wins here that they're not supposed to.
Right. Well, as part of that is shaking off, right, like the Wojo era, in that Wojo would get wins that weren't expected, but would immediately follow them up with losses that weren't expected either. Right. So if there's more, if the peaks are more consistent and fewer unexpected valleys, that's a turn altogether and really gives reason for hope. And as we know, hope never dies.
Hope is a dangerous thing.
But it's also the best of things.
It is. All right, let's get into Big East play. 20 games here. We'll try to get through them too quickly so this doesn't drag a little bit. But so Big East play starts with a trip to Xavier, a team that does return a lot. I think in our preseason predictions, Phil, a lot of us were high on Xavier, having them. Most of us had... in the Anonymous Eagle article, most of us had Xavier either 2 or 3. Maybe the lowest they had were 4. So I think that's a tough way to start. So I got a loss at Xavier.
Yep, I've got a loss there as well. I think just too much experience and on the road for a third game I take that back because the UCLA game's home. So never mind. But yeah, it's a tough place to play. That's going to be a loss.
Yeah, so and the next team is another team a lot of people are high on, UConn. I think a lot of, whether it's us in the MUBB pack or just preseason predictions, UConn has predicted top three in the Big East by a lot of people. So even though it's a home game, I got that as a loss as well, just because that'll be an experienced team and probably one of the better teams in the Big East.
Yeah, I've got that as a loss as well. I think that represents the third game in a row where we're playing what will be top 20 teams, right? I think Xavier, UCLA, and UConn all spend time in the top 20. And that's, again, tough ask for an experienced team.
Could very well be three straight ranked opponents, depending on how the season shakes out, but we'll see how that goes. Then at St. John's, this is a team that, it seems like we're always talking about St. John's as a team that has dudes, but just doesn't have the wins to show for it. Maybe that's changing a little bit under Mike Anderson, who, you know, obviously an upgrade from Mullen. But still think Mike Anderson has never had a sub-500 season. But, you know, they got a guy who I think is the preseason player of the year in the Big East, Champagne. And, you know, Posh Alexander was great for them last year. I think going on the road at St. John's would be a tough one. Could be a very fast-paced game, a lot of possessions in that one, with Marquette's new style going with Mike Anderson's style. But I got going on the road to play St. John's as a loss as well.
Yep, I've got it as a loss. I think to your point from a style, and I think it's going to be a little bit of chaos game. So anything's possible. But yes, I have it as a loss.
We talked earlier that both of us may be a little more down on Creighton than a lot of others are. That is Mark Kitz's first Big East win.
I agree. I think this is where they turn the tide. I mean, things could be looking a little bleak at this point. I mean, we're projecting, you know, a 5-game losing streak there, which I think is entirely realistic. But I think he gets off the schneid with the home game against Creighton for sure.
Providence is a team I'm not sure about. I think Providence is a team Marquette might get a split with in the season, but we'll see how that goes. But I do have the home game against Providence, which is the next one on the docket. I have that as a win.
Yeah, so I mean, a little peek into how I constructed my my prediction. I took the three teams that I feel very strongly are below Marquette and basically set a sweep. So Georgetown, DePaul, and Providence, I think, are both on paper in real life worse than Marquette as they currently constructed. I mean, obviously, there's always injuries and other things going on. So I've got Providence as a win for Marquette. So kind of a winning streak there, two in a row.
Back to back. Do you have making three in a row with a trip to Georgetown after that?
I do, because I think Georgetown is a terrible team with a terrible coach.
I think Georgetown is going to be bad, but I think young teams have hiccups on the road sometimes, and sometimes you lose games you're not supposed to. So for that reason, I have the trip to D.C. as a loss, because I can't see every game going exactly as planned. So for that reason, I put Georgetown as a loss. But I have him bouncing back in the next game, a home game against DePaul. I have that as a win.
I also have it as a win. And again, crazy things have happened under all coaches in the DePaul game. But I do think Shaka will help shed some of the baggage that was, good Lord, just don't lose to DePaul. And I think we get a convincing
hopefully do
win
not
here,
lose to DePaul.
And I think we do well against DePaul
in both games
this season.
And thing is, yeah, like you said, that wasn't just a Wojo thing.
Yes.
Buzz teams played poorly at the
ball. I'd love
it
to die at quiet death, kind of like the red
sometimes.
Flags.
That's a home game against the ball, so win that one. I say also a win against Seton Hall. Yeah, this is maybe a game where Marquette might not be favored, but just because it's at home, I'm going to take a win against Seton Hall at home.
I am also going to take a win there, which just to match the 5-game losing streak, I now have a 5-game winning.
Well, so you got them really bouncing back nice. Well, I got them 4 out of 5 at this stretch, so I have a bit of a bounce back too. But this next stretch here, Phil, I have them coming down to earth quite a bit. This is a tough stretch here. At Villanova, Xavier at home, at Seton Hall, at Providence. I think that's a tough stretch. I'm going to start with at Nova. I mean, come on, that's got to be a preseason,
sure,
almost unanimous pick to win the league.
Yeah, not even optimistic Phil can black magic that one.
And then Xavier at home, again, this is a team that's picked to finish near the top of the league by a lot of people. I got that as a loss as well.
Agreed.
And then at Seton Hall.
Yep, I've got that as a loss as well.
I think Seton Hall is one of those teams that you could probably get a split with. I think they might be a little better than Marquette. Maybe you can catch them when you're at home, but I think going to their place might be tougher. So I got a loss there. How about at Providence?
I've got a win there because, again, I think Providence is going to suck.
Okay. And again, similar to the Georgetown thing, I don't know if I'm as low on Providence as you are, but weird things happen when Marquette plays Providence. On the road, I'm going to take that as a loss. And then after
that, do you
think
anyone's going to come on the court?
I'm sorry, I missed what you say there.
Anyone going to come on the court that game?
Hopefully, no one comes on the court. Hopefully, no bats. Hopefully, no slippery floors where we have to change the rules for traveling to accommodate it and finish the game. Weird things happen when Marquette plays.
Yeah, that's a weird place.
Yeah. Villanova again, home game this time. I have that as a loss.
This is where optimistic Phil gets a little out of control, and I'm actually going to predict a win there. Again, I think that would, other than the Wisconsin game, I think that's going to represent a signature win in the Shaka era, right? Like, Villanova is going to be great, but they're also not unbeatable, right? And I think Shaka's going to be coaching this team up to get a shot at a big signature win there. So I've got a W there.
Boy, I love it. I love it. Okay, at UConn, I got that as another loss.
I also have that as a loss. Tough ass to win two big games in a row with one of them away.
And then at Butler after that.
I've got a win at Butler because, I don't think Butler is going to be awful, but I don't trust Laval Jordan to win important games, and I think Marquette and Butler were going to be in similar places in the standings, so I think Marquette can go in there and get the win.
All right, now coming back home for Georgetown, win?
I have a win against Georgetown as well because, well, Georgetown.
Okay, at Creighton. Now, this is where, even though Creighton's pretty good, Marquette's actually played pretty well at Creighton sometimes, so I actually have a win against Creighton.
Yeah, and I know I acknowledge that Creighton wasn't great, and I think they're going to have issues or whatnot, but I actually have a loss here because, I mean, they're going on a bit of a winning streak, and, you know, just away at Creighton could be difficult. So I'm gonna call for a loss there.
All right, then Butler at home. I think they can get Butler at home, so I'm going to take a win against Butler.
I agree. I'm with you there.
Then at DePaul, the House of Horrors, but I'm going to try to be optimistic here and say win.
I'm gonna say win as well, a win in the win trust.
Very good, very good. And then the last game of the season, senior day, home against St. John's, just because I think St. John's is pretty good. I'm going to say loss there.
Yeah, I get that. But again, optimistic Phil can't be helped. I'm going to say we get a win because I really feel strongly this team will be trending in the right direction by the end of the season. So I think they can get a home win on senior day.
All right, so doing the math, you know, Phil, you and I did the math offline real quick. I think we did it too quickly. I was redoing it as we were talking. So I have Marquette 8-12 in the Big East. You have them 12-8. If I have it, I think I marked a few wins as losses and a few losses as wins, but I recalculated. I just going through it again because I think I had that one wrong when we talked before the pod. So double check me here. I think you have them with 12 Big East wins, and I have them with 8 Big East wins.
Yeah, you're right. I missed the Seton Hall. I don't like that. I really like the 11-9 number. So there's one of my wins that, you know, maybe it's the Nova home.
So I think I'm kind of doing the same thing, whereas the game by game, as opposed to what I'm predicting, may be off by a little bit. Because we did this before, and I had it 9-11 and 11-9, but now we just did it again, and I have it 8-12 and 12-8. So we missed something somewhere. So yeah, we're producing on the fly here, folks. I know this is great podcasting, but redoing the math according to our game by game, I have 8-12 in the Big East. I have them just below 500, 15-16 overall, which would miss the postseason, which would be disappointing. But hey, maybe they get a win or two in the Big East tournament, and then they're postseason eligible. Then Phil, you have them 12-8 in the Big East, which is quite optimistic, to be perfectly honest. But yep. 19-12 overall. So that's where we have it. But yeah, I felt better about when I had it at 9-11.
I agree on that. I felt better at 11-9.
So yeah, let's come back to the middle. So I'm going to official record saying 7-4 non-con, 9-11 the Big East. That would put them at 16-15 overall. And you basically just a couple wins better. So you have them 7-4 non-con, 11-9 in the Big East, so that would have them at 18-13 overall, which that might be a tournament team.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely back in team bubble watch, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is a possibility.
Why not? Like, why not be interesting? You know, look, everybody's optimistic this time of year, right? Even teams that are picked to finish last say, hey, we're going to prove a lot of people wrong. We think we can be a tournament team. Everybody's saying the right things. I don't think anybody goes into their preseason media day saying, man, we're going to suck. Like, this is going to be rough.
No one's like, don't watch us. We're going to be not good.
Yeah. Please don't come to the – no one's going to say that. But for what it's worth, Justin Lewis says, we have a goal of making the NCAA tournament. Daryl Morcell has said, hey, look, I've been around some pretty decent teams. I think this is right up there. I think they could be, you know, a decent tournament team like I've played on at the University of Maryland. So let's be optimistic. Maybe – I hope they – blow these expectations away. I hope they hit that mark of 19-12 that we just tabulated for you, Phil. I think they can do it. And, you know, it maybe as in past years where I was like, I just don't think this team to get there. And even if they do, it just means another year under the current staff. And I just don't know if that's a good thing. I hope this team just blows past all the preseason expectations. Maybe they can finish 7th, 6th in the league, something like that. I mean, if you can get up to 6th in the Big East, you're probably in the discussion for the NCAA tournament. 7th, maybe. It depends on how the rest of the league does. That's where you're in a situation where you're hoping all the Big East teams go out in their non-conference and wins big games and just boost the overall tempted to say RPI, but that's not the term anymore. We don't say RPI, but the overall net, the net ranking of the teams in the league, and that's good for everybody. Rising tides float all boats, or whatever the expression is.
Yeah, well, and there's, I mean, and don't forget the Big East tournament, right? Like, I mean, we'll see how the roster shakes out, but I mean, stylistically and roster composition, like, there's nothing that says this team couldn't win 4 games in 4 days, right? So, you know, there's all sorts of paths. Early days, but there's all sorts of paths to some excitement with this team.
After seeing Georgetown win the Big East tournament last year, anything is possible.
That's true.
Madison Square Garden. And, you know, that's one thing that I'll say, this is one last hope I have for this team, as opposed in contrast to the last few years, that the team gets better as the season goes along. And the team is made progress in early March as opposed to where they're going to be in November. Whereas the past few years, especially the 2019 and 2020 seasons, the team just totally collapsed and was just, you know, running on fumes towards the end. And, you know, last season just wasn't that much of a season. So, but the last few years, the team has run out of always ran out of gas and was just, it's like, man, this season needs to end. I hope when this season ends, whatever the record is, we are looking at this team saying, they made progress this year. They're a better team now than when they tipped off against Illinois, and so that's my hope for this team, is that there's progress made, and we say, look, Shaka didn't win a championship this year. Shaka didn't get us to the tournament, but that's okay. We are better now than we were in November. That's my biggest hope for this team.
Yeah, well, and I think I agree with that. I think my biggest hope, if I could articulate it, is that we have a return to, like, the gritty, assertive, aggressive, you know, hungry team. I think that kind of coincides with what you're saying, but that, like, you know, like you said, we ran out of gas the last couple of seasons. I really am optimistic and hopeful that this team has a ton of fight in them come the end of the season, right? Like, that they are not just kind of fading late. Even if they have the talent, that they are out-talented, they won't be out-hustled, they won't be out-efforted. I think that's what I'm most looking forward and hopeful for with this team.
Exactly. That's what I'm hopeful for, too. And I know our guy Rob Lowe at Crack Sidewalks is saying top 40 defense or bust. Maybe that's too high, but Shaka has had a top 40 defense on KenPom every year since his third year at VCU. So is that realistic for this team? Maybe. Maybe not. But
you don't bring in a piece like Morcell without putting it all in on having a great defense.
Yeah, so that's I think that's going to be the identity, and we will see how it goes. But yeah, so those are our preseason predictions. Maybe, I don't know, do you think they're too optimistic? Do you think they're too pessimistic? Or do you think, as always, I'm pessimistic and Phil's optimistic, and that's just the way we're going to roll with it? Hit us up on Twitter. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF. 23 at Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to the Scrambled Eggs I'm sorry, the Cracked Sidewalks, the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We leave the podcast there. Also go to CrackSidewalks.com, leave your comments where we post the podcast there. And remember to go to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I think I hit it all. I think that's everything, Phil. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
No, I'm just excited for the season. This is the first time in a couple of seasons where I am truly enthusiastic and excited for the season.
Yeah, I feel that too. Maybe it's just, a product of maybe the people I follow the most on social media and just a general statement. But I feel there is more optimism around this team. Whereas around mid-March last year, I see a lot of people, yourself included, talking about, I don't know if I want to renew my season tickets. I don't know if I want to keep going. But I see a lot of those people saying, I'm all in. I'm going back. I'm renewing my season tickets. And people who haven't been to games purchased? Say, I'm going to games this year.
Yeah, and my season tickets are purchased. I am ready to roll back in person and just be with the crowd. I'm excited. Now, I'll complain 3 weeks later that I hate the traffic and parking's a mess or whatever, but I'm ready to be back with my people.
Hey, I'm ready to be. I may need to get up there myself this year. It's been a while since I haven't been to see a game in the Fiserv Forum myself. So I may need to get out of Texas for a weekend and come up and see a game myself. So we'll see if that happens. But I'm excited to watch this team again. So
live podcasts in your future, maybe.
Maybe so. We're gonna try to be optimistic this year. It's maybe a little bit of a change in pace. Hopefully, it's for the better. Until next time, everybody. Seashells and balloons.